Welcome to Season 5 of the Fight Science Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Sullivan. In this series, we are further expanding our knowledge by speaking to experts in the field of physiology, psychology, nutrition, strength and conditioning, and mindset training. We'll be speaking to the coaches and practitioners who do this every day, and to the researchers and academics who are at the forefront of the sciences. Today, our guest is Dave Wood. Dave, better known as Woody, is a trained intensive care paramedic. In his years of experience, he has done it all, including providing life-saving time-critical interventions, delivering blood to patients who are bleeding out, and providing treatments to patients undergoing drug-induced psychotic episodes. In short, Woody has trained his mind and body to deal with stressful situations. The reason I am talking to Woody today is because of his business called Woody's Movement Workshop. It started treating muscle imbalances, however, has developed into a complete performance center that focuses on utilizing the art of breathing to enhance all aspects of an athlete's performance and recovery. He's currently working with many of the elite athletes at City Kickboxing and seeing phenomenal results. In today's episode, we are going to discuss the beginnings of his journey and break down the science and practice of how he uses breathing to make these elite level athletes even more elite. There's a lot to get through, so let's get to it. All right, green light means we are live. So back for another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. Now today, I'm joined by a very special guest. This is a very exciting episode. I've been looking forward to this one for a little while. Mr. Dave Wood, also known as Woody, the owner of Woody's Movement Workshop. Woody, thanks for coming on, mate.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Jordan. I'm also, you know, really looking forward to this discussion, based around performance breathing and how it can help the fight athletes.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the thing. It's almost like you've popped out of nowhere, not so much all of a big flash of light, absolutely nowhere. It's kind of been a build up, but it seems you're really working with a lot of the City Kickboxing boys, and we'll get into it, but the results they're getting with you, that's what I'm excited to talk about. Because I've had conversations with BJ, with Brad, and it's almost like it sounds a bit like science fiction, how much they're improving from going through your workshop and doing these techniques. So before we get into that, can you give us just a little bit of background? How did this come? How did Woody's Movement Workshop come to be?
Yeah, so this has all started from very humble beginnings, and my own background is, as a professional ocean lifeguard, which I did for about 8 years full-time, both here in New Zealand and then abroad in England and Cornwall. And it was something that, you know, I used as a means of traveling and seeing the world. And then when I came back to New Zealand, I didn't really have anything behind me. And I was running down the beach for a surf one day, bumped into a mate who was telling me about this paramedic degree. And the next day I had enrolled in the paramedic degree, and I started that degree literally 2 weeks later. Wow. The degree's 3 years, and I've now been working as an intensive care paramedic for the last 10 years on the road on a frontline ambulance. And that job, you know, requires that we have an in-depth understanding of breathing physiology. So then, the sort of how I got into starting the workshop, Woody's Movement Workshop, which is actually a shed in my on my property out here at Piha that we converted into a gym, was just that I started to get really interested in muscle imbalance, because I've had my own in-depth experience with muscle imbalance secondary to having bilateral hip surgery. And so when I started this thing, it was all around working with clients who had muscle imbalance, especially in and around the lumbar pelvic complex. And after doing that for a few years, like anything, you sort of build, and you start taking things in different directions. And I started working with athletes and around muscle imbalance, but also found that a lot of these athletes and just everyday people had breathing imbalance. So that's how it all sort of came about. The breathing was also an integral part of my own journey in getting out of chronic pain. It was a failed bilateral hip surgery that I had and developed chronic pain, which has been the most challenging thing in my life. And breathing was really the last part of, the last bit of the puzzle in getting out of chronic pain as a means of down-regulating my nervous system.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to, let's go into it, because that's something that blows my mind, especially when I hear some of the guys talk about it, when BJ talks about it, especially when Brad talks about it. And like you would know, these guys are world-class, high-level elite athletes, and they're training intense every single day. And it's that recovery is so important. Can you kind of talk about what is this breathing imbalance, and then what are you doing with these guys to correct this, and what exercises?
Well, to start with, you know, breathing is connected to everything that we do. You know, if you have fear, you tend to rapid breathe. If you're, if you have pain, you tend to breath hold. If there is stress, you tend to go into an erratic breathing pattern. And if you're calm, your breathing tends to be calm and controlled. Conscious control of the breathing is really a means to intercept your emotional state, because it is very hard to be in a stressed state when you are breathing slow and calmly. It sends signals to your brain that your body is relaxed and calm. So, you know, I guess the first part of this whole, you know, performance breathing training is getting the guys to have better awareness of their breathing throughout the day. And, you know, that's something that a lot of people think, well, I'm breathing all the time. Why do I need to focus on my breathing? Well, breathing is activated or is part of the autonomic nervous system. We don't have to think about it. And, you know, things that we don't think about can become imbalanced. And the breathing is one of those things that, along with muscle imbalance, I mean, the breathing is a muscle. The diaphragm is a muscle. And it can become imbalanced secondary to stress and training load and you know, work that work-life balance. It all feeds into our breathing. And, you know, with stress, we tend to start what we call upper chest breathing. So using the upper chest, the shoulders and the neck muscles. And this is, you know, those are accessory muscles to breathing. What we want to do is get better access to the primary muscle of breathing, the diaphragm. And a lot of these elite guys that come in, because they're working in an environment where the training load is high, they actually adopt a chronic breathing pattern, which is upper chest and shoulders. Because when they train, they're training at that anaerobic threshold where they are using those accessory muscles a lot. So it ends up feeding into their day-to-day breathing, ends up affecting their day-to-day breathing. And the breathing imbalance or how they breathe day to day affects their recovery and it affects their sleep. So it's really tied into everything.
Yeah. Can we go through the process, Woody? Say if one of these athletes, and I don't know, let's use BJ as an example. And that's BJ Bland from City Kickboxing. If anyone doesn't know, PFL fighter, like we were talking about offline, insanely fit, one of the most talented guys in that gym. Talk us through that process, like from the very get-go, like when he comes in, like if there's assessments that you're doing, and walk us through how you're going through these assessments or whatever it is, and then how you're programming, you know, these breathing exercises and everything.
Yeah, so that was a really interesting process working with Brendan, and I sounded Brendan out, and we had our first session in that first COVID lockdown. So it was an online session, and, you know, what is hard with the breathing stuff is that as soon as you mention breathing, people instantly correlate that with yoga and, you know, perhaps being a hippie. And it's not something that, you know, in the performance world is big yet. It is getting big, and it will be a huge part of performance training, especially in the fight game. I think over the next sort of 1 to 2 years, as the stuff is starting to become more accepted and the research is starting to trickle down. But with Brendan, it was about, first of all, it's about getting the athletes to understand why breathing is so important to performance. So breathing and its effect on endurance, breathing and its effect on recovery, its effect on sleep, its effect on, you know, being able to calm the mind. So it's getting these guys to understand why it's so important. And then the starting process with Brendan was really looking at his mechanics of breathing. So how is he breathing at rest? Because we know that how these guys breathe at rest is how they breathe when they're under exertion. So it's about looking at the mechanics of breathing. Does he have good access to the diaphragm? Does he know how to activate the diaphragm and breathe what we call a horizontal breath, which is expanding at the lateral rib cage, a 360 degree breath where we fill the bottom of the lungs, the top of the lungs, the back of the lungs, and that's all about mechanics, so how we're breathing. And that's really the basis for for where we start at is to get them better access to the diaphragm. And there's a lot of, you know, historically there's a lot of talk like breathe into your belly and, you know, what does that even mean? Breathe into your belly. So a lot of the wording around this stuff is, you know, you need to change the wording and make it more performance orientated and easier to understand.
When you're doing that assessment, is there particular patterns of breathing that is, say, more conducive for the type of athlete that BJ is, say, like a combat athlete? Is there certain types, or is there like a best fit or best mold, say, as a human, you should be breathing in this particular way, but because of all these other things and, you know, the stress and training that you've caused it to go off here, is there like a kind of like a gold standard that you're trying to get these guys back to?
There is, and that's an interesting question because, you know, the first thing is getting these guys nasal breathing. So breathing not only in through the nose, but out through the nose. And that changes the mechanics of breathing. It changes the muscles we use to breathe. It changes the breathing rate. So to give you an example, if you're mouth breathing, there is less resistance to airflow because the hole is bigger. And when there's less breathing, we slow down the resting breathing rate. And that has a direct effect on the nervous system. It helps to calm the nervous system and put us into that, you know, what we call that parasympathetic state, which is that rest and recovery state. So that's really the foundation of everything, is getting these guys nasal breathing. And again, because they're training in that high intensity environment, it becomes normal for them to mouth breathe. And there's definitely, you know, there's a place for mouth breathing in any sport, especially combat sport, because these guys need to train in that anaerobic, at that anaerobic threshold. And that requires mouth breathing. But we start integrating some really smart things. We integrate something called the breathing gears, which is a breathing system where gear one is light nasal in, light nasal out. And we get these guys to stay in gear one during rest, recovery, and light exercise. Then we use gear two, which is moderate nasal in, moderate nasal breathing out. And that's when the intensity starts to increase. And then as the intensity gets higher, we shift into gear three, nasal in, mouth out. And then gear four, mouth in, mouth out. Now, the important thing is once we get to gear four, is that when the intensity decreases, we don't stay in gear four. We transition back down through the gears. And that's, you know, all about energy output, controlling your energy output, and also, you know, controlling your breathing to the cadence that you're working, that the cadence you're working in. Because a lot of the time, you know, mouth breathing just becomes a habit.
Yeah. Okay. So this is one of the craziest things that I wanted to talk to you about, because when I spoke to Brad and Woody does a lot of work with Brad Quake Riddell. So for anyone listening, one of the biggest, if not probably the biggest prospect coming out of City Kickboxing, coming out of this part of the world right now. Brad's been working with you for quite a little bit now. And this is something he said to me, because I track all these guys' numbers. We have heart rate monitors on them, all their recovery, all their calories in, blah, blah, blah. We do everything. And I remember this particular session where he was hitting this huge output, and he said, and his numbers were crazy. Like the calories he burnt in that session were just crazy. And I said, like, what was going on? And he spoke about these breathing gears, and he spoke about saying, yeah, no, I feel like I've got the gears down pat. And I'm thinking, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? But he was almost saying, like, I felt like I could control my level of fatigue through this breathing. He said, I could go so much further. I could push so much more. And he was saying, like, getting into that red zone, you know, he was on the Airdyne bike and he was going and he started kicking in the breathing. But then he had to go hit the bag to just stay up there. And he said, once I got to that red zone, I was so comfortable being in there because I feel like I've finally got to like the control over my breathing gears. And I was looking at him going, what are you talking about? And then I was looking at his numbers and I was like, wow, this is literally crazy. Like, this is crazy. Is that what you're training these guys for? Like, I guess we'll take a step back and we'll go, once you've done these assessments, how are you teaching these guys to do that during training? How are you teaching them? Are you breaking down each one of these gears, one, two, three, and they've got, say, gear one training, and then, okay, let's put this into place, and gear two when you're doing this session? How's it all come together?
Yeah, so it's been awesome working with Brad and all of these fight guys, because they're so disciplined and they're all looking for that edge. And they're open to trying new things and change. So that's been really refreshing. So to answer your question about the breathing gears, I think the easiest way to integrate it into to sort of show the guys how to use it in real time is to get them on the bike, on the air bike, and we start off in gear one. So the whole emphasis here is to stay in gear one for as long as you can, that light nasal breathing. We know that, you know, nasal breathing draws air deeper into the base of the lungs because nasal breathing has a direct connection with the diaphragm. With nasal breathing, we're looking at a 10 to 20% increase in oxygen uptake. And there's some really interesting things there that we can sort of explore later, like nasal nitric oxide, and that's released from the paranasal sinuses and its effect on oxygen uptake. But we keep them in gear one. Then as the while they're on the bike, as the intensity increases and the CO2 builds up, because CO2 is the primary stimulus to breathe, not oxygen. So as the CO2 builds up, the stimulus to breathe will be higher, and then we shift them into gear two, and that's that moderate to deep nasal in, moderate nasal out. And then we sort of look at the heart rate creeping up, and as the heart rate creeps up and the intensity creeps up and it becomes too stressful to stay in gear two, because the stimulus to breathe is so strong, we then move into gear three. So these guys are doing this in real time. And in gear three, we sort of stay there until the intensity gets really high. We're talking, you know, shifting up into that red zone. And that's when we shift to the mouth breathing, when we really need to shift more air. And it's something that it becomes easier as we start integrating in the CO2 tolerance training, the breath hold training. Because when we start integrating that part of the training in, having a higher tolerance to high levels of CO2 means at any given level of exertion, your breathing is going to be lighter and more controlled. So they're able to stay in gear one and two for longer. They're able to stay in gear three for longer before they shift into gear four. Now, if we look at a natural fight, what this translates to is in rounds three, four, and five, holding off that heavy mouth breathing until later. And it's that heavy mouth breathing that uses a lot of energy, because with heavy mouth breathing, we're using the big muscles of the chest and the shoulders.
So is there, a limit to each one of these stages, Woody? Is that what you're saying? Like, obviously, the longer you can stay in gear one, you're going to delay being in gear four, because I'm assuming it's like your lactic threshold. Like, yes, you can build it up and you can get there, but there's only so long that you're physiologically, your body and your muscles can handle that level of lactate until you physically have to stop and clear it. Is that the same? Like, you can only spend so long in gear four before you have to go back down and relax?
It is all based on the individual, and it's all based on their breathing capacity and their tolerance towards high levels of CO2 and low levels of oxygen. Gear four is not that heavy mouth breathing is not sustainable. It's there for those short bursts, and when we're in that anaerobic environment, but we want to delay that for longer. And then if we look at that 1 minute in between the rounds, that 1 minute, fights are won and lost in that 1 minute. How quickly can you down-regulate your physiology, your body's systems in that 1 minute? And that's where the breathing gears, become so important. In that 1 minute, it's about shifting down those gears. We don't want it, in that minute, we don't want to be heavy mouth breathing the whole time. Just to add to that, just because we go to mouth breathing, it doesn't mean we have to sacrifice the mechanics, that good access to the diaphragm. We're using the diaphragm to pull in more air and expand that 360 degrees of expansion.
Yeah, it's wild stuff. Can you talk to us about, so the CO2 tolerance training, and I've seen videos and Brad's spoken to me about when you guys take these guys out to the beach and you do all this crazy training. Is that the CO2 tolerance training, or is that something completely different?
No, well, it's one and the same, but the CO2 tolerance training is very specific. So we use a company called the Oxygen Advantage, run by an Irish fellow called Patrick McEwen. And when I was looking to find a system to train CO2 tolerance, this one really resonated with me because it was, you know, it was backed with good research and it was easy to implement. And for these guys, you know, this stuff, this, you know, the breathing performance stuff is an addition to their current workload, and it's got to be easy to integrate into their training. Otherwise they won't do it. So the oxygen advantage training is 17 exercises. So an example would be an inhale, exhale, hold your breath, start walking. When you get to a medium air hunger, signifying that the CO2 levels in the body have increased and the oxygen has dropped, you start running. So your breath is still held. When you get to a strong air hunger, signifying that CO2 has built up even more and oxygen has dropped even lower, the same environment that they'll be fighting in, you stop and you minimize your breathing for 6 breaths. So what we're trying to do here is work in an environment where CO2 is high and oxygen is low. And we would repeat that exercise 5 times, and then we would move on to the next breath hold exercise. We also have, with the fight guys, it's about teaching them this training, but then integrating it into their training.
So these exercises, Woody, so you've got the 17 exercises, which is essentially the training to build up the CO2 tolerance. And then you're coming in and going, and you're looking at their training and going, okay, wrestling here, you've got jiu-jitsu here, you've got sparring here. And are you talking the guys through, okay, these are the gears you need to be using, or like, are you strategizing and putting together an individual, say, breathing plan for each one of these sessions, or how's that look?
Yeah, it is. Even though we're using the same program, it is very individualized. So we sort of customize it to the athlete, like working with, these fighters so close to the fight, you have to understand that the CO2 tolerance training is an extra stress. It's an extra stress load. So it's all about managing that. To answer your question, how do we integrate it into their training? So there's some really smart things we can look at. So one is in the warm-up. We want to integrate a little bit of CO2 tolerance training into the warm-up, because we know that as soon as they start training, they reach high intensity very quickly. And so we want to warm up the respiratory system, the breathing system. So we would integrate 5 strong breath holds into their warm-up. Inhale, exhale. So let's just say their warm-up is on the bike. Every minute they would do a strong breath hold. Inhale, exhale, hold the breath until there's a strong air hunger. Then breathe normally, wait for a minute, inhale, exhale, hold the breath. And that does a couple of things. It warms up the respiratory system. It gets that CO2 high and the oxygen is low, the environment that they're about to be thrust into. But when we do strong breath holds, it causes the spleen to contract and empty its contents into the blood circulation. And the spleen has a very high red blood cell count. Red blood cells carry oxygen. And so by emptying the contents of the spleen, up to 300 mils of blood, into the circulation, we get that, it's like a biohack, we get that added benefit of having oxygen-rich blood circulating around the system when they start training.
Hey guys, just a quick interruption to the podcast to tell you about a project that I've been working on for the better part of the last year, TrainAid. TrainAid is going to be a series of supplements that I've formulated alongside some of the top researchers, academics, and practitioners in the field of sports nutrition. But these aren't your run-of-the-mill everyday supplements you'd find in a supplement store. These are the few performance and lifestyle subs that I use with my clients, from the everyday person to UFC world champions. Our first product, TrainAid Hydration Solution, is going to be dropping before the end of the year. If you want to stay up to date with it, then be sure to head to www.trainaid.com and join the mailing list. All right, let's get back to the podcast.
How long does someone have to do this then? So say, is this like a program they come in, they go, hey, Woody, I want to work on this breathing. You go, okay, mate, we need like 8 weeks and I can get you to this point. Or is it like most things, like, is it a continuing thing that you develop and you continually get better? Or is there like a minimum amount of time? Or can, say, someone come see you for like a weekend and they can have like some revelations and leave that weekend and have, okay, I can do this to a certain degree? Or what's the time frame on this like?
So if we look at the CO2 tolerance training, we have a metric that we use, and the metric is called a BOLT score, a blood oxygen level test. It's a very simple test to do, and it lets us, it gives a insight into the athlete's CO2 tolerance. So to give you an example, when Brendan started with us, his Bolt score was 17 seconds. Now the aim is to have a Bolt score of 40 seconds. And what the Bolt score is an inhale, exhale, hold your breath. And the first stimulus to breathe, you stop. And the first stimulus is normally a contraction of the diaphragm or the breathing muscles, signifying that the CO2 has built up in the blood to a level where it creates an air hunger that stimulates a muscle contraction. And that's where you stop. And by doing the CO2 tolerance work, what we're trying to do is build that score up to 40 seconds. So Brendan has now got a Bolt score of 34 seconds, which from 17 to 34 is a huge adaptation to his breathing system. And what that allows him to do is at rest to have a lower breathing rate, but when he starts training, to have a lower breathing rate at any given level of exertion, because he has a higher tolerance to high levels of CO2, remembering that CO2 is the stimulus to breathe, not oxygen. Oxygen has to be very low to start being the primary driver of your breathing rate and depth.
I guess this would be useful for the guys listening. And I guess if you haven't done a lot of physiology, why is it? Why is it CO2 is the stimulus for breathing and not oxygen?
Good question. If we look at cellular metabolism, it's oxygen plus glucose creates energy, right? And the offset of that equation is CO2. So the byproduct of you know, cellular metabolism is carbon dioxide. And I don't know if I can directly answer that question. What I know is that it is the buildup of CO2 is the result of that cellular process that stimulates our primary drive to breathe. So we have a breathing center in our brain that detects these CO2 levels. We have chemoreceptors in the blood vessels in our body that detect CO2 levels. And slight changes in the CO2 level will stimulate an increase in breathing. So it's an interesting concept. It's one that, you know, a lot of people shy away from explaining these in-depth physiological concepts to people or to the athletes. But for me, it's really important that these guys understand what's happening biochemically in the body with CO2 and oxygen, because you know, that's such a big part of performance, is that these guys understand it, embrace it, learn it. Because, you know, for me, you're not going to do something unless you understand it.
For sure. And I guess coming back to the gears, Woody, you said for gear one, say it was a 10 to 20% oxygen uptake. Is the goal of the different breathing gears, is it to be more tolerant to the CO2, or is the goal to get more oxygen in? Or what is the overall goal? Is it just the tolerance, or is it to get more oxygen in?
The overall goal really with the breathing gears is to mar your breathing, or to couple your breathing with your energy output. So if your energy output is low, there is no benefit to be heavy, to be mouth breathing at all. In fact, it's hugely detrimental, because you know, mouth breathing, when we look at mouth breathing, because it is an upper chest breath, we're just oxygenating that upper portion of the lung. So we want to pull that air deep into the base of the lung, and that's where that nasal breathing becomes so important. It is about coupling your breathing with your energy output. So when energy output is very high, it makes sense to be breathing with your mouth, because at that point, it's all about shifting air as quickly as possible. That's not the case when we're working in a low intensity environment. In a low intensity environment, it's more about that controlled breathing.
Yeah, excellent. So we went through like how you're going, what you're going through when these guys are coming to you. You go through the oxygen advantage, you go through the exercises, and then you put this into their training and go, okay, we'll do this on the bike and we'll assess it. What are you doing to like week to week to kind of check in on these guys and make sure, okay, are we progressing the way that we need to be progressing up to your fight? What does that process look like?
Yeah, it's an interesting process because because the training load for these guys is just, it's something that I'm not used to seeing. And so, you know, you'll get one of the fighters turn up at the gym and they're literally dragging themselves in there because, you know, and whilst you've got a plan to put them through some breathing training, you know, the condition that they turn up in is not a condition to add extra load. So, you know, you've got to think on your feet a lot. And the great thing about the breathing training is that we have some, a big portion of the breathing training is about implementing cadence breathing to down-regulate. So cadence breathing is, I'll give you an example of cadence breathing would be a 4-second inhale, 4-second hold, 4-second exhale, 4-second hold. And that style of breathing is designed to down-regulate the nervous system, take these athletes from that sympathetic state, that fight or flight state, into that parasympathetic state, that recovery state. So we can use the breathing to directly influence the nervous system. So that's a very basic cadence. We would then look at a cadence of, say, a 4-second inhale, 4-second hold, 8-second exhale, 4-second hold. And the reason why we prolong the exhale is because the exhale is driven by the parasympathetic nervous system. So by prolonging the exhale, we get more parasympathetic tone, which directly transitions them into that recovery state. And you'll know that in yourself, you know, if you take a breath in, hold the breath, and then breathe out and relax, it is very calming. The out breath is very, you know, a very calming process.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And this is something I've also noticed that Brad's done. And it's anyone who knows Brad, it's very interesting to see because he's putting a lot of effort into this, and he always calls it his like parasympathetic training that he's doing. And have you got these guys doing things at home, say, where they're relaxing, say, listening to music and focusing on this breathing? And I've noticed Brad's been doing that a lot lately. Is that based on your recommendations?
Yeah, 100%. So the first thing for these guys, you know, is to go away and take conscious control. You almost have to be obsessed about the breathing.
Yeah.
Take conscious control of the breathing throughout the day when you feel any emotion. So if you're stressed, take conscious control. Go back to that cadence breathing where we inhale, hold, slightly prolong the exhale. It intercepts, you know, physiological stress. It, you know, if you're feeling apprehension. So, you know, it's if we look at a scenario for these guys, let's say they're an hour out from a fight, and they get that feeling, that tight feeling in their chest, there's stress, there's apprehension. For them, what we're trying to teach them is, right, in those moments, embrace that feeling, bring it in. That helps to intercept the brain's response to stress, psychological response to stress. Then take conscious control of the breathing. Slow the breath down, quieten the breath, soften the breath. And these guys have trained it so much that they're able to very easily turn it on, but they're also very easily able to switch it off through taking conscious control of the breathing because we've practiced the cadence breathing so much. So, yes, it's something that we try to get them to do right throughout the day. You've got to remember that these guys are operating in that high-stress, high-tension environment all day. And so the nervous system becomes chronically upregulated. They live in that sympathetic dominant state, that fight or flight state, based on their training load. So it's about throughout the day resetting with the breathing to then transition back to that relaxed parasympathetic state. And, you know, how are these guys expected to sleep all night when they're preparing for battle all day? You know, a lot of these guys are having, you know, issues with sleep. And sleep hygiene is about setting your sleep up throughout the day, down regulating your nervous system through this breath work to teach the body, you know, it doesn't have to be in that constant, you know, upregulated state.
Are you trying to train them to be able to push into that parasympathetic system even when they are training or when they are in the fight? And the reason I ask is, the first thing that came to my mind when you're talking about it, if anyone does say jiu-jitsu or wrestling, and you get someone who's new to the sport and you put them in a position where, say, that their breathing is blocked or compromised and you've got like good pressure down, it's almost a response that they start breathing heavy and freaking out and they get really claustrophobic and moving around. Does doing this parasympathetic training, does that help situations like that, say when they're in training or when they're in the actual fight?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, 100%. You know, when we talk about the sympathetic and the parasympathetic, what I tell guys is to view it like a dimmer switch on a light. Okay, you can turn it right up and the light will shine really brightly, and then you can dim it down, obviously. And it's the same with the nervous system. We can be in a highly sympathetic state, but we can also, and you know, in a fight, you're always in a sympathetic state, right?
Yeah.
But you can tone it down a little bit. And that's that the good fighters are the ones that can do that. They can, you know, they'll find distance in a fight and they'll refocus or recalibrate or, you know, take a deep breath in. And it's all about, you know, shifting their state in real time, being able to sort of shift into less of that sympathetic dominant state. And with the breathing training, you know, what we're actually doing here, especially with the cadence breathing, is training the mind to have one point of focus. So, you know, nowadays, how we've set, you know, our minds up is to grab at things. The mind very easily grabs at, you know, all these distractions. And, you know, having that one point of focus, focusing on the breathing, is training the mind. And, you know, in a fight of 20 minutes, the focus has to be, you know, it is that one point of focus. And if you lose that focus, it's the difference between, you know, getting knocked out or not, I guess, getting punched in the head or not, or getting choked out. It's that, you know, being able to hold that focus for the whole 20 minutes of the fight. So the breathing is such a powerful tool, you know, to maintain that one point of focus. And what we tell the guys is lie down, feet up on the wall, focus on the cadence breathing. And as soon as your mind starts wandering, bring it back to the breathing.
Woody, would you almost say that this is almost a form of mental training as well?
The connection between the breathing and the nervous system, it is so tightly connected that it's almost the same system, you know. 100%. It is mental training. It is training the mind to be calm, because an agitated mind doesn't make good decisions. An agitated mind will create physiological stress, so stress in our bodies. So it is very much about training the mind to be calm. And, you know, this has been a huge learning experience for myself. You know, I got to sort of a point where my nervous system was just a wreck, and, you know, someone would pull in front of me in the traffic and, you know, straight away I'd shift into that sympathetic state. But now it's about the total opposite. It's about staying as calm as you can. You know, someone will pull in front of me in the traffic nowadays, and I don't skip a beat, because I know that, you know, having control of your nervous system and your breathing is so powerful. That is performance at its absolute essence, right? Is, you know, is that mental ability to stay focused.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, that's a lot of great info, Woody. And I don't want to keep you too much longer, but I do want to ask you this last one. And for the people who are at home, what are some like practical tips? What are some tips if someone's listening to this, they go, holy smokes, like I need to get on top of this. Let's say maybe they can't reach out, maybe they can't get in contact or whatever, for whatever reason. Are there things that you recommend that, I don't know, the average person or the average athlete could do, whether that be breathing in ice baths, you know, doing the holds, doing whatever, getting onto the oxygen advantage? What are some like practical tips or practical ways people can start getting in control of their breath?
Yeah, the first thing is, you know, to have better awareness of our breathing, to take conscious control of our breathing. What is our breathing doing? And it's very easy to not think about your breathing, because it's part of that autonomic nervous system. We don't have to think about it. It just happens, you know? So, you know, it's called complacent adaptation. With anything, you know, the environment that we now live in is about comfort. And, you know, that comfort can be really detrimental to many facets of, you know, of our health. And one is our breathing. We become very complacent about our breathing. So it is about just tapping into your breathing. If you feel fear, stress, anxiety, apprehension, what is my breathing doing? Revert back to conscious control. Breathe in through your nose. Hold the breath for a couple of seconds. Breathe out and relax the body. Very hard to be in a physiologically stressed state when you are breathing slowly, calmly, and quietly. You know, it's a the breathing is really a direct, has a very direct effect on putting you into that parasympathetic calming state. And, you know, like I said, that's a big part of our work with these athletes is being able to get them to shift easily between that sympathetic and that parasympathetic, energized versus relaxed, high output versus low output. And really, you know, the ability and there's some, you know, the ability to be able to transition is has such a profound effect on energy output. And, you know, a week leading up to a fight, if you're in that red zone, that sympathetic state all the time, you are using energy, you're using a lot of adrenaline. And you know, what we want to be able to do is, you know, be really calm and more of that parasympathetic tone leading up to the fight and then turn it on once we're in the ring.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't speak highly enough from the results that I've seen with the guys that I work with who have done this. It's almost to the point where I want to say it's mind-blowing. It's probably not mind-blowing for you because you've been around it for so long. And like you said, it's an area it's going to boom in the next year or two. And I think this is for competitive, high-level, elite-level athletes. Like you said, they're always looking for that extra 1%. And, you know, for the average Joe that gets around, yes, this is very useful for elite-level athletes. Extra 0.5, 1% could be the difference between you retaining your belt and you losing it, you know?
Yeah. This is we did a workshop with the guys from CKB a couple of weeks ago, and one of the things I said is, "Fucking forget about the 1-2%, man. This is way more than 1-2%. This is breathing. This is oxygenation. You know, you can live for days without eating, for days without drinking, but you can only live for minutes without oxygen. You know, that sort of puts the stuff in perspective. And you know, with this whole journey, I'm sort of standing on the shoulders of giants here. You know, the people that I've learnt from the breathing experts, Dr. Belisa Vranich, Patrick McEwen from the Oxygen Advantage, Brian McKenzie. These are all, you know, Brian McKenzie is, you know, that's where I first saw these breathing gears. And so, you know, and all this breathing stuff, a lot of it comes from yoga and Tai Chi and all these, you know, the ancient martial arts. And so we're just bringing it now into a performance environment, changing the wording around it, and getting it out there. So, you know, it's taken a long time because the research takes a long time to trickle down into those performance environments, but we're starting to see that now. There was a podcast recently on Joe Rogan, James Nestor, an incredible podcast about breathing and performance. So, you know, this stuff is really starting to get traction, and it will be, you know, it's going to happen rapidly. It will be a huge integral and part of performance for these fighters. And we're seeing that overseas. It's just we're sort of late to catch on over here.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's actually something that came to my mind when you were talking, is that I know a few gyms and a few trainers in the US who have utilized this. And I'll be honest, like a couple of years ago, I remember them talking about it, and I remember going, "Oh, okay, like yeah, maybe." And then seeing how their athletes have developed, and there's very particular athletes that I've kept my eyes on. And their gas tank and how they handle themselves, especially like you said earlier in the later rounds, it's phenomenal. And I guess we're lucky and so fortunate now that you're working with the boys in New Zealand, and I'm sure it'll spread right across this region. And I've seen it even in the short period that you've worked with them, the impact that it's had. And it really is mind blowing. Like you said, this is the future of high performance. And yeah, where we come in, where 0.5 and 1% can literally be the difference between winning and losing, you taking a grasp of something that's a huge slice of the pie is massive. That's a massive thing that these athletes can do.
Yeah. Interesting. You talk about the overseas guys. Like, so there's that recent fight with Dustin Poirier. Yeah, so I watched that fight, and after that fight, I was so convinced that he had specific breathing training. And so I reached out to his strength and conditioning trainer, Phil Daru. I think that's how you pronounce his name. And I saw that he's an Oxygen Advantage trainer. And so I asked him about the breath hold work that he was doing with Dustin. And we sort of got to the point where I said to him, what was Dustin's Bolt score? And his blood oxygen level test, the test that we use to look at CO2 tolerance, was 45 seconds, which is absolutely outstanding. It shows, you know, a huge adaptation to his breathing system. And to put it into perspective, I've only got one other athlete that I train who has a Bolt score over 40, he's a top level triathlete. So, yeah, you know, that fight was really interesting, just how much energy he had and how he was able to come out from in between those rounds and look so energized.
Yeah, and that's exactly the example. And I've had Phil on the podcast before and he's spoken about it, and it's incredibly interesting. And yeah, he did say to me after the podcast that Dustin was looking extremely conditioned. So, hey, credit to him, because it works, right? Like it works. And I'm glad that you're doing this with these guys and doing it with the guys at City Kickboxing. I'm sure a lot of other guys in the Australian New Zealand region will jump on it, and I'm looking forward to when they do. But Woody, if these guys are listening to this and they go, holy smokes, I need to get on this, I need to start doing this, I need to start working with Woody, I need to learn these methods, what's the best way for them to get in contact with you? What's the best way for them to follow your work on social media?
Yeah, Instagram handle is Woody's Movement Workshop. They can jump on there and message me. We've got a website, wmw.co.nz, and email. But it's all in my on my Instagram handle, all the direct link to the email and the website. But yeah, I'm always looking to work with motivated people. I love working with the fighters because, you know, it's such a raw sport, and the, you know, you can see that, you know, these guys create adaptation so quickly, and you can see the breathing stuff has, you know, a rapid and dramatic effect. So it's a great environment to be involved with, and Rad, what you're doing, you know, can't wait to learn, you know, more about that side of things. I find that really interesting. And it'll be good to actually catch up in person and have a beer sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. Once this this COVID bubble pops, I think I'll be jumping on the first flight over to New Zealand, absolutely. But Woody, thanks so much for taking the time, man. I know you're super busy, but again, I'll say it one more time. I've said it a few times. I cannot recommend this enough for the people at home who are listening, the athletes, the everyday person. Please get in contact with Woody. Shoot him a message. Ask how you can better understand this and how you can jump on top of this. So Woody, thanks so much for coming on, mate. Really appreciate it.
Legend. Thanks, Jordan. Thanks so much. Have a good day, mate.
And there it is, another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. Woody is paving the way for what I am predicting is going to be a major part of all athletes' training program in the years to come, especially as the research of how breathing can benefit performance and recovery becomes more in depth. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and you'll also be able to download it from my website, www.thefightdietitian.com/podcast. If you enjoy listening to the podcast, then be sure to head to the podcast app to give us a rating and leave us a review. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the Fight Science Podcast.